Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Turn It A Punk Classics, a show where we take old episodes of Turn It A Punk that have been lost from the internet and return them to their previous glory by sticking them back on the feed. You can find this podcast on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and all other forms of social media. Well, that's pretty much it. At Turn It A Punk, you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Left For Damien. I play in a band. More information can be found at FUCKEDUP. .cc.
As far as a correction in the episode, at one point I refer to Matt Dillon as Matt Damon.
Now sit back, relax, and enjoy another TOAP classic.
Amanda, thank you so much for agreeing to come on the show today.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to be a guest.
Well, you know, and as I was kind of mentioning you to you over email, I think for myself, and I know for like a lot of other people, you're kind of like the first sort of positive media representation of a punk that I was exposed to as a kid.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
But I want to start this podcast off the way I start them all off, which is, how did you get into punk? Do you remember the first time you kind of came across it?
Absolutely. Just like it was yesterday. No, not really. My memory is kind of fading, so I will do my best to recollect. But
I tend to jog people's memory on this show.
That's good. Well, I actually listened to a few podcasts so I could kind of get a sense of the types of questions you are. I was like almost trying to do your punk homework. To prepare, and not that I did a lot because I'm not that great with homework anymore. But
no.
My very first show was kind of what did it to me. And don't judge me, but I used to love The Police when I was like 9 and 10.
No, and, no judgment at all.
Good, good. Well, I'm glad we're starting off on a good foot then. There was The Police picnic, so mm-hmm. a big outdoor kind of event that took place in Oakville in, I think, August 1981.
Mm-hmm.
And I begged my older sister to take me because, of course, my mother wasn't going to let me go to a concert on my own. And so she bought tickets for it. And I will say this, and she'll probably kill me for it, but she made me smuggle in alcohol. Because as you know, at shows, there are always lots of cops checking everything. And she kind of made me go ahead with the cooler. And I had no idea what was in it. And they just patted me on my head and told me how cute I was. And along I went. So, yes, I made the party more fun that night, even though I didn't drink. I will say that. but immediately and automatically, I just saw like all these punks around, and it's something I had never come across before. And I was just mesmerized. Like my sister told me to stop staring, but it was more because I found it so fascinating, not because I thought it looked weird. I just thought it looked amazing. And I actually remember some of the like styles of haircuts to this day. And it was just an eye-opening kind of, I fucking love this kind of scene. And then, you know, I saw Iggy Pop and The Specials and Killing Joke and Oingo Boingo and all these bands that I don't think I had ever come across before. And then seeing the crowd and just seeing the interaction and just the music, just I was hooked.
So
hooked then and there.
From that show. And it's what an amazing bill. Like I kind of always forget, like, you kind of have like a real good cross section of like Ugh It's a Music War era of just like killer bands playing that show.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Was your older sister into punk music or at all? Was she into music at all?
Oh, fuck no. She's like so straight. No. She was more into like 70s kind of rock, maybe, you know, the Supertramp, kind of Styx, you know, that kind of thing. Which, hey, I listened to her records too, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that was more her kind of scene.
Was there at the time, like, where did you hear The Police? Were you listening to, like, CFMY?
Yeah, probably CFMY. And, God, when did videos come out? Not too much longer after that, right?
Yeah, I guess it was. I think they would probably have been City Limits, right, at that time?
Yes, City Limits. That sounds familiar.
That's like my first memories of music are watching those videos on City Limits and stuff like that. Like it was such a, what a cool time for music that stuff was being played on TV.
Well, yeah. And I mean, The Police I would have seen in, okay. And I used to buy this Teen Beat or whatever it was called because I absolutely love Matt Dillon. So
yeah,
it's kind of like part and parcel where you would see The Police at that time or, you know, The Clash and all that kind of stuff. So that's probably where it started as well.
When our mutual friend Jay Maskus was on the show, he told the story about bringing Matt Dillon to see Lisa Suckdog Carver play at CBGB's because he wanted to go to CBGB's. And she had pooed, or I don't know, pooed. Or, like, there was a lot of like blood and other matter involved in the performance, and she came running over to him and was like, "Oh my God, Matt Damon, I love you," and just gave him this huge hug right after the set.
Awesome.
So from kind of there, where did you kind of go as far as music goes? Like, you're 10 years old, so I imagine going to shows was a little difficult.
Yeah, that was totally difficult. My next show after that was Billy Idol, which you know, again, totally loved his look, which from him made me start looking at Gen X.
Yeah.
And listen to Gen X. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of places really to buy a lot of music, but the Record Peddler. So that would be the first point of stop in Toronto for getting decent records. And, you know, head shops always had lots of posters and stuff when it was. That's kind of what I think I was drawn to, like, images first and seeing Sex Pistols posters and in the magazines. And then it's like, okay, now I need to buy a record. And how do I get money to buy a record? And, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's not like I had a huge record collection. It was probably very small based on what I could afford.
Yeah.
But just trying to watch whatever I could on TV at the time, which was few and far between. But, you know, as soon as I started kind of going from Gen X and then listening to the Sex Pistols and the Clash, and I was really first fascinated with anything kind of British, right? So The Exploited and the Angelic Upstarts and GBH and Sham 69 and all those kind of punk and disorderly albums where it was, you know, tons of different bands. So I got to, you know, listen to 10 bands rather than just buy one kind of thing. So that's kind of what I concentrated on first. It was anything British. Wanted to go to London, wanted to move to London.
Well, I think, like, the fact that you had a record collection period at that age, no matter how big, is really impressive to me. So that is awesome. Going to Record Peddler, was that when it was on College or Girard Street? Girard Street?
Wait. Yeah, the one at Girard. Yeah. But then there was also
the one in a streetcar, right? Like Record on Wheel or something in a streetcar, an old streetcar?
Records on Wheels? And then what? There was one on the Danforth too that I used to go to.
Oh, I'm trying to think of one on Danforth is. What neighborhood did you kind of live in Toronto at that time?
See, I wasn't. I was a suburb girl, so.
Oh, you're just coming downtown.
Yeah, I lived in Mississauga, but I went to an arts high school, which was in Etobicoke, which then kind of, you know, met a lot of people that lived in Toronto and hung out in Toronto because it was way cooler than Mississauga. So. Yeah. as if. So yeah, just did a lot of exploring and stuff like that. And then, yeah. You know, when I started filming Degrassi, well, we had different filming spots in the East End of Toronto. So then I got more familiar with the East End as well.
That's awesome. So you were just going out and hunting for records while you were on set when you had break and stuff?
Oh yeah. I'd be like, okay, I have an hour. I go in an hour, right?
That's awesome. So what was kind of like after, you know, Billy Idol, what was the sort of first smaller show, I guess, you went to? Or even like local or bands that you remember from that time. Obviously, you were into the more British stuff, but were there any local bands that were kind of speaking to you early on?
Well, you know, I do have to admit not everything I listened to was punk.
Yeah, absolutely. So
I did like a lot of new wave and stuff like that, and anything local too. So whatever local Canadian band played at, say, you know, the Molson Amphitheater.
Yeah.
Which my parents would let me go to, right? So that could be anything from
Nash the Slash, you know, or
Well, funny that you say that. I saw Nash the Slash at that 81 gig. He was
Right. He played the Picnic.
Yeah, but anything from like Honeymoon Suite to Images in Vogue, like anything, I would go see.
Did you ever see Spoons?
Oh God, love the Spoons and Platinum Blonde. So
the that first Platinum Blonde record, that first 7-inch, and even like the first 12-inch, it's kind of like a straight up punk record.
Totally loved it. That's awesome. Still like that.
So what were some of the, like, when you, I guess, how did Degrassi kind of cast you? I'm sure you've talked about this like a billion times, but like, how did like that whole process go for you? Like, you know, obviously you like had this incredible look, but was that kind of like how they picked you out, or I guess you go with this?
Yeah. And I've only told it a billion and two times.
So. I apologize.
We're okay. I was already going to an art school, and, you know, I already had a kind of a different look and stuff like that. But it was through my arts high school that I learned about the audition for the show. Mm-hmm. And part of the prep, right, because they were looking for just natural kids, or, you know, not necessarily kids who had acting careers. So I had no headshots. So we were told, you know, just take a few pictures of yourself, fill in this form and send them in. So my parents and I kind of had a little argument about my photos because, well, I had to get my dad to take the, you know, the pictures for me. And it was like, why? I don't think you should wear your hair up. I think you should wear your hair normal. Right. And of course, already with my attitude, I'm like, fuck them. If they don't want my hair, fuck them. Cause I'm not changing who I am. You know, just the surly teenager that you would typically come across. And I'm like, I'm not changing it. This is how I'm, you know, auditioning. Take the picture, done. So weren't they shocked and surprised when I got accepted into the first kind of round of acting workshops and stuff and didn't have to change my hairstyle.
Yeah. Where did the look of charging your hair come from? Like, what were some of the influences for your look?
Really, it was Colin from GBH.
Yeah. That's awesome. Did you see any of those bands when they would come through town?
I saw GBH in London. And, of course, I always have to – not London, Ontario. But I got to go to London in 87 with a girlfriend. Don't know how my parents agreed to that trip. And GBH were playing. So we're like, oh, my God, we have to go see GBH. So – seeing GBH in London in 87 so, it was just awesome.
That is awesome. It's funny too, because those guys are still around today. Like I haven't seen them in a couple of years, but we'll play shows every once in a while and they'll come out and it's like, they're still cool to this day. That's awesome. So where, back when you were kind of on Degrassi, did you start going to shows like more frequently? Because I know from just like talking to other people over the years that, you know, like MSI, for instance, like Glenn Salter from MSI would talk about you going to their shows because they would cover the theme song.
Yeah. Oh my God. See, now you're bringing up memories. I'm like, oh yeah, I was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd go to anything, right? Anything that I could go to locally, because, you know, as much as people think acting is my passion, it's really music. Mm-hmm. I love music. I can't go a day without music. I can go without TV or anything like that, but I can't live without music. So at that time, it was any show that I could go to, I would.
And yeah,
usually, because, you know, you're underage, it's usually afternoon shows or Sunday shows or whatever. I would go to it.
It's funny too, because, like, I guess at that time, you know, you're filming locally in Toronto, so you would still be able to kind of maintain a show going to schedule.
Exactly. Well, I saw at high school, and I also worked.
Yeah, obviously, like a real life.
All that busy life, but yeah. And I mean, there were lots of great shows at Canada's Wonderland as well, too. Like, I went to see probably every Depeche Mode, Smiths, Cure, kind of.
Oh, Sisters that's of awesome.
The type jokes. I loved them as well. I actually saw the Smiths on my 16th birthday. So that is one that I will never, ever forget.
Well, what record was that? Were they touring on?
Could have been Post Meat is Murder. Yeah, what's the one after that? Queen is Dead. I suck with song names. I suck with
titles, records.
But
how was sick was Morrissey at that show? Was the performance amazing?
It was so awesome. Oh. It was just one of the best days of my life. I mean, I've been a vegetarian since probably I was around 8 or 9, maybe even earlier. Hid it from the folks for a few years. And he was the first kind of musician or anybody that I had ever heard of that was a vegetarian.
Yeah.
And made me feel like, you know what, it is okay to be vegetarian and I don't have to be ashamed about it. And so, like, listening to dreary old, you know, Meat is Murder, I reveled in finding an artist who, you know, spoke to me in that way. So that particular show, that was the first time I had seen them too. It's just amazing from beginning to end. And of course it rained. So of course my spiked hair by the end of the night was or to one side, and all my black mascara was down my face, but I still loved it.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, it would hide my tears if I had black mascara running down my face because of the rain. So where were you kind of getting into this British bands? Were you getting, like, the NME and Rock Sounds and those kind of magazines, or?
Oh, yeah. Whatever alternative type magazines were out there, even fanzines, anything to get my hands on.
Do you remember any of the names of the fanzines you liked? Because that's my nerdy obsession, is collecting old fanzines.
Really? Yeah. I'm not laughing that I'm saying that you're nerdy or anything.
No, please do not. No, I am honestly, I don't know if you've heard this on the show, Amanda, but I'm sitting in front of a wall of Toronto demo tapes right now that I've collected over the years because I am very nerdy.
I'm trying to think of what they are, because there were a few local ones too, because I had started dating someone who was, you know, very into the same scene, and he had the best record collection ever. And there are a few zines that he,
Well, I know who you're talking about, because I actually bought records off him at one point.
Really?
Yeah. And his zine was called Soap and Spikes.
Awesome.
Yeah, his zine was called Soap and Spikes back then. And but yeah, I bought a bunch of records off him, like, years ago, my friend Mike and I. And
oh, really?
Yeah. And that's the thing, actually. This leads me to my next point, is because I remember seeing you at a Sick of It All show much later on.
Yes, my favorite.
Well, I know we're going to get totally into Sick of It All, but I wanted to kind of get back to that point. What was it like when Degrassi kind of took off and you're, like, becoming well known and you're still going to these, like, little DIY shows? Did people change the way they treated you, or was it just kind of the same?
A bit of both.
Yeah.
I would say. Right. So, had a lot of punk rock chickers want to beat me up because their boyfriends thought I was cute. Yeah. Or my parents were always amazed at how many times my wallet would get stolen.
Yeah.
And then just people wanting to be around you, who wanted something from you.
Yeah.
Or just the people that were really generally fans of the show and thought it was great. So it's always a mixed kind of bag. But I think one of the hardest things for me was, you know, when you have punk hair in the early 80s, when it's not so common and you're used to getting thrown out of places because of it, all of a sudden you're on a show and people are staring at you even more. And you're,
yeah.
You know, your reaction before that was always like, what the fuck are you looking at? Right.
Yeah.
But now it's like, oh, I don't know if they're staring at me because of the show or because of my hair or both. So I had to kind of tone down my automatic, you know, lash out reactions to people, because more often than not, it was becoming that they knew who I was. Right.
Yeah. And Toronto's kind of a hater city. So,
yep. Yep.
Growing businesses and finance professionals, you need Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software. It's powered by the Bill Divvy corporate card, which helps growing companies scale with credit lines of $500 to $15 million, automated expense reports, and as many virtual cards as you need. For a limited time, get $500 when you get started with Bill Spend and Expense. Request a demo at bill.com/get500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank, member FDIC.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
So I can only imagine punk being also kind of a hater community at times, it being a perfect storm.
Yeah. And I would always laugh too, because there came a point too, I remember, with do getting thrown out of shopping malls and stuff like that previously.
You would get thrown out of shopping malls for your hair?
Oh, yeah. Eaton Center, Medeval Town Center, Square One. Whoa. And there was one time I was actually Degrassi was nominated at the Geminis. And I was so proud of myself. I had just bought like a $200 dress at in the Eaton Center. And I'm sitting resting and the security guard wanted to kick me out of the mall. I'm like, for what? Because you're just lolling around. I'm like, I just spent $500 because I bought a whole bunch of things. I had all these shopping bags around me. I'm like, really? It was
wow.
So it was still dealing with that kind of double-edged kind of recognition. And I'm like,
yeah.
Dude,
so what,
off.
That's so. And so I guess it was like, was it just that punks? And I know around the Eaton Center at the time, there was a big thing about punks and skinheads. I totally can remember that on the news. Like,
yeah.
Was it just like the punks were the menace at the time type thing?
But again, it's somewhere, not all.
Yeah, obviously not all. Yeah. But I mean, like, just the media portrayal of punks at the time, I should say.
Exactly.
Yeah. And which is funny, because you actually, like, you know, not to fan out, but like, there's an episode where you're looking for the job and it's portrayed on the show, the reaction to the way you look. Were you having influence on storylines at all, or were that was just something they were picking up too?
Absolutely. It was, we would have, before every season, kind of like working sessions, and, you know, cast members would throw around ideas and more about what was happening in our real lives. So a lot of the storylines do come from, you know, things that happen to cast members, because they, you know, the writers really wanted it to be real.
Yeah.
And so took bits and pieces from our lives.
How much, like obviously there's like the Susie and the Banshee shirt in one episode. I was always looking out for, like, especially now as an older person, when I watch older episodes, like looking out for the musical references. Were you allowed to bring musical stuff into the set and be like, were you consciously trying to do that?
I was. You know what the hard part was? They tried to they didn't want the characters wearing a lot of black and white, which totally ruled out 99.9% of my wardrobe.
Yeah.
So it was really difficult, because we did bring in a lot of our own clothes and wear them. So not being able to wear black and white, I'm like, oh, how do I? Wow, I can't wear my band shirts and stuff. But every once in a while, I'd be able to. Or in photo shoots, right? Like, I know I've worn a COC shirt.
Oh, that's awesome.
Give it all shirts for publicity events and that.
Well, you bring up the hardcore stuff there. And do you remember when hardcore kind of started coming into your life, or these more sort of aggressive bands?
Probably like 16 or 17, mm-hmm. I would say, you know, because I did mention I wasn't into a lot of the British stuff, but then all of a sudden, you know, videos come out and you get, and I had already started going to shows in the States too with that said ex-boyfriend. So, you know, we would go to New York and Detroit to see a lot of bands play.
Yeah.
So that's when I would get exposed to a lot of the more hardcore and that kind of scene, which I just automatically and immediately fell in love with. And from that, it's just, you know, you read about, you know, if I like Sick of It All, then I'd read about Sick of It All. And then you'd hear about a band they liked. And then you'd listen to that band and go, wow, yeah, that band's really fucking cool. And then that leads you to another band. And it just kind of blossoms in that sense, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So then you go out of your way to kind of, okay, I need to find out, how the hell am I going to find out more about this band? So you buy the record, because that's the only way. I don't have a computer to download videos, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's, you know, you do, well, I bought a lot of tape cassettes, still have a couple thousand of them. But
really? Did you? Yeah. Because I know you DJ, did you keep all your records too?
I do have some of my records at one point in time, and I feel like smacking myself for doing so. I gave away a lot of my good ones.
Okay. Yep. Yep. We all make mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah. Sad time in my life. I'm not sure why did I go through that nice spell and want to give away my great punk records.
Oh, humanity.
Yeah. So I still have a lot of tapes, unfortunately, but not as many records.
Well, did you keep like a lot of like the local bands that you were seeing at the times, demos and things like that?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Would bands send you records, like knowing that you were like a punk on TV at that time? Would you get stuff like fan mail? Obviously you get tons of fan mail, I imagine, but like, would you ever get like records and bands sending you things?
That would be more if I was at a show.
Yeah.
That would happen. We did get some fan mail that went through our production office, but then it would be read first before passing on.
Yeah.
Just to make sure there wasn't anything too scary in there. But it was more when I was at a show and I'd be like, oh, listen to my band. Here's the tape. Here's the record, et cetera.
So at that point, you're still buying records at Record Peddler. I have to ask, do you remember Brian Taylor?
Of course I remember Brian Taylor. I always thought he hated me, but then I learned he hated everybody.
Oh, that's awesome. Did you ever see go on.
But I would force my I would like force myself to talk to him, because I'm like, I'm gonna make you fucking like me. Right? But it was just fun trying to push his buttons and kind of hang around him when you knew he wanted you to get lost.
Did you ever see his band Youth?
Of course. Yeah. They're awesome.
That's amazing. So I got to talk to you about some of those bands and some of that era, because that is also an era I love that I think is incredibly under-documented, unfortunately. Chronic Submission and like Direct Action and those bands. What were those shows like at that time?
See, I love those shows. Right. Yeah. And but at the time it was just part of your scene. So you don't look at it in a different way, because that was me. And that's where, like, I loved seeing shows, and, you know, there weren't a lot of girls that listened to that music at that time. I'm not talking about two girls or like 20, but it's, do you know what I mean? It was really tailored towards guys. And
I think that's starting to change now. Sorry, not to cut you off.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I mean, I still have some of my old t-shirts and they still go down to my knees, like a men's small type thing.
Yeah.
So it was interesting being a part of a scene too, where there weren't a lot of girls hanging out.
Well, it's also very antagonistic towards women at times, unfortunately.
Eh.
Yeah.
That's my response. But I sound like not a feminist, but
No, go on.
Sometimes it is what I'm not asking them to fucking sing about hugging trees and eating granola. I want some attitude. I want some fucking energy. I want someone to get a rise out of me. That's why I like the music.
So what were like at that, I guess when you're going to Youth 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 in Chronic Submission, that's before you're on Degrassi, right?
Probably just around the start, I would say.
Okay. Did you ever see the Bunch of Fucking Goofs?
Of course. Absolutely. Yeah.
Did you ever go to Fort Goof and see shows there? Or were there shows? No, there weren't shows at Fort Goof, right?
No. And the thing is, you know, I was at so many places, but don't remember what they're called or, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because half the time you'd see shows in someone's living room, right?
Yep. Yeah. House shows. It's a staple of the genre.
Exactly. So I don't remember whose house I was at any given day, but sometimes those were the best shows.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. When I was going to say MSI, a band I brought up earlier, Glenn has a story that, cause obviously you'd be going, you probably would, I imagine see them tons of times. They were a pretty local band. And they would always cover the Zit Remedy song that you actually brought Joey down to sing with them one time. Is that true?
You know, now that you say that, that sounds familiar. That sounds like something. Like, Pat, come on, come to the show. You'll totally fucking hate it. But, you know, hey.
How many?
I was always trying to get, you know, like when I was on the show, I mean, the only person that I kind of hung out with was Kathy because we were kind of musically like-minded.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd play the exploited Fuck the USA during break on set and everyone was just horrified. And I didn't understand why they didn't like it because how could they not love this song, right? So trying to get any castmates to come to certain shows was sometimes challenging, but I mean, you know, for Sick of It All, for example, I would bring Kathy. I brought Kathy to a couple of shows. If bands liked Degrassi and they liked Spike, well, then I'm like, oh, well, they've met me. Who else can I bring? And Kathy was always my go-to person. And now Stacy, too, because Stacy's up for anything. She'll enjoy herself anywhere. So.
Yeah. So what kind of music was Kathy into?
She was more – she was into punk and ska.
Yeah,
all that kind of stuff. Like,
but you were like, you were more of the hardcore kid, I guess.
Yeah, I really liked punk and hardcore.
So I guess I got to talk about Sick of It All and the first time you saw them, because do you remember the first time you saw them?
Yeah, I saw them in Buffalo at a really small bar, and Lou could barely stand up straight because the height of the building was not that great. So it's kind of like really crammed spot. And I want to say it was Good Riddance and Sick of It All and a few other bands. And I just loved them all and thought they were fucking awesome. But it wasn't until maybe the following year that I met Sick of It All when they were playing in Toronto.
So where did you get to see them ever back when they were playing around the first time or no? Like the first, back in the day, in the 80s or no?
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So that Buffalo show, was that with Good Riddance? It wouldn't have been Good Riddance. Who would have been back then? I'm trying to remember. I think I've seen the Side by Side or.
Oh my God. You know what? It wasn't Good Riddance. It was Gorilla Biscuits.
Gorilla Biscuits. Yeah, that's right. Oh,
that's it.
That must have been a crazy show. Were you? I guess you weren't straight edge ever or anything, but do you remember when that stuff came in?
Oh yeah.
That show must have been bananas, to bring up a Gorilla Biscuits kind of reference.
Yes, it was great.
Did you?
I'm trying to think of what other bands are playing, but
oh, go. Did Project X play, or is that the one? The Project X play.
That sounds familiar too.
Did Judge play that show maybe?
See, now you're bringing up bands like saw them.
Wow.
But it's more, maybe at that show. Because I pretty much went to anything. Like, I always went to Buffalo to see shows because a lot of those bands wouldn't come across the border for one show. They wouldn't really make money. So spent a lot of time going to Buffalo, sometimes a couple times a month, right, for whatever show that was playing.
Did you ever see that show in Toronto? I think it was The Accused in Brotherhood.
Not sure.
It was like, I don't know. Brotherhood's just this weird band that I'm obsessed with because it's like members of Foo Fighters and Sun in the same band.
Mm. So. I mean, I've seen The Accused, but yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Okay. I could go just asking you bands you've seen and just talking about that forever and ever. But one thing I definitely got to bring up, because Jay certainly always brings it up to me, is the time that you met Dino Jr. back in 1990. So can you tell me a little bit about that story?
Sure. So just hanging out at home one afternoon, I was living with my friend Cheryl, and she gets a phone call from Bookie, who worked at CFMY, and he was interviewing Dinosaur Jr. Somehow my name came up. And, you know, they're playing a show, and it would be great if we could go to the show and then we could meet them. And, so my friend and I were like, yeah, sure. We'll go to the show. And so we showed up earlier so we could hang out with them before the show. And I don't know if he told you this part, but I think the band was in a fight.
Probably.
They weren't speaking, and it was the most awkward time of my life, because it was literally hi, and none of them talked.
Yeah.
And then it was my girlfriend and I trying to amuse ourselves. One of them had a hacky sack. We don't know how to play it, but we were trying. It was awkward. So fucking awkward. I'm like, in my head, I'm like, why did they want to meet me? They're not even talking to me. And so yeah, later on I heard that they might not have been speaking to each other that day.
Well, to make you feel better, yes, that's probably true. They weren't speaking to each other. But also, to be fair, it's kind of always that quiet in the Dinosaur Jr. backstage. I was just in one two nights ago, and I got to say, the only moment where Jay really lit up was when I mentioned that you were going to be coming on the podcast, and he – I don't know, that night, for whatever reason, you definitely cheered him up on a deep soul level, because that's his favorite Toronto memory.
Well, that's too funny, because it's one of my most awkward memories.
It's amazing when you hear things from different sides, how the story changes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was awkward too, you know, I'm like 20 and still kind of shy, but not shy.
Yeah.
So, you know, now I can make small talk with anybody, but at that time I was like, oh my God, I really like Dinosaur Jr. and they're quiet and I don't know what to say. And, you know, if it were me today, I'd be like, why the fuck aren't you talking to me? Say something.
Yeah. And even that's been met with awkward silence, I've seen. Like, I've definitely... I'm not going to recommend you having to listen to any episodes of this podcast, but if you want to hear how awkward a conversation can be, even between someone I consider my friend, you should listen to the Jay Maskus episode of this podcast.
Okay.
It's 45 minutes of really stunned, awkward silence.
Well, then, you know what? I can look back on that memory now and say it really wasn't it was nothing personal.
No, not at all. Not at all. Please. I would, if there's one takeaway from this conversation between you and I for you, let it be that. It's not at all personal. So I guess I could honestly talk to you forever, but I'm not going to keep you all day, because I really appreciate you sitting down to talk to me about any of this stuff and all this stuff, because I always hoped you were as big of a fan as this conversation has shown you to be to me. Oh, it's so awesome.
Excellent. And I feel like I should have done my homework better.
No. Well, you know what? We can do a part two one time. Next time I'm
okay
where you are and stuff, we'll do this in person.
Okay, perfect. And then if it's in person, I can rummage through my things and find stuff I've saved from.
Oh, awesome.
Like Well, actually, yeah, I have 89. What's Sick of It album? Sick of It All album came out in 88 or 89. But yeah. There was a poster and I had it. You know, when you put the epoxy on it and.
Yeah, kicking the hardcore reality.
Framed it. Yeah. Got some, you know, flyers from shows in the 80s in Detroit. I know I have Social D stuff because I used to go to Detroit to see Social Distortion anytime they played.
Oh, who are some of the bands they would play with back when you were seeing them? I love all that Detroit stuff too. I'm trying to think of some of the Detroit bands back then. Damn it. My mind's going. Oh, did you ever see Pitbull? Yeah.
That doesn't sound familiar.
Okay. They were a Detroit band.
Were they?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Well, you know what? If I find one of those flyers, then.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
We'll confirm. Because St. Andrews Hall was such an awesome place to see shows.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's such a legendary room. Before I let you go, though, you still listen to. Because obviously there's that episode from a few years ago where you had to marry the guy from Taking Back Sunday. But
yeah.
Do you still listen to punk and hardcore and stuff?
Every day.
That is awesome. That's wicked to hear. Well, Amanda, thank you so much. Oh, and also, before I let you go, I got to bring up our mutual friend, the woman who actually booked the first show that I ever yelled at, hardcore sang at, I don't know, Carol, our mutual friend Carol, who put this together.
Yes.
So yeah. Shout out to Carol.
Props to Carol.
Well, that's the punk connection, you know? It mm-hmm. It goes all places.
It does. It's like a punk network, right?
Exactly. A network of friends.
I was trying to think of something more clever and it didn't work. So it's quite evident, but fail.
Well, I think there's a tape comp from the 80s called the Network of Friends. So that's what it is. The punk network of friends.
Well, there you go. See, that's what I was getting at, right?
Well, thank you so much, Amanda.
Thanks, Damien.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.